we will get started. So without further ado, we drew numbers ahead of time to see which order candidates would go in to do an opening statement. Each candidate will do a two-minute opening statement or less. And Ben Stuckert, you are first up.
No, I think that we're just going to pass this mic around.
No, you've got a lapel mic.
Oh, look at that. That's fancy. So I want to start by thanking the library system, the Homeless Coalition, the Low Income Housing Consortium, everybody for being here this morning, and especially you that came down to hear this conversation. So thank you very much. I'm going to stick my opening statements to homelessness and low-income housing because that's the topic today. So my name is Ben. I grew up in Spokane. My dad spent his entire career, 38 years, working at SNAP. So I've been steeped in this conversation. I went to St. Anne's Catholic Church when I was growing up. We opened a Sunday lunch program in our community center there. So I have knowledge, personal experience with this issue. But I was just struck today. Linda walked up to our table this morning, and Linda is 67. She lived in 14-unit housing. She's shaking her hand back there. Linda, 14-unit apartment building, just got bought by a developer from outside Spokane, and they kicked everybody out. People on Social Security, people on disability. Last night, Mr. Baumgarten emailed me, and he'd been in the foster system his entire life, and he aged out of the foster system, and so he spent the last year and a half before he found housing, homeless. It's a very complicated situation. Human beings are very complicated beings. We need to be looking at this in a multifaceted way. The city is only one part of the solution. We have the federal government, which has cut housing money to our community by over 50% over the last 30 years. We have a housing crisis in Spokane. We have a crisis where there are more people on the streets than there are a shelter system that just provides the basic needs. We're not funding properly, connecting people to those services like addiction services and mental health services inside the shelter where we're providing a bed. We need to be doing more as a community, and I look forward to hearing everybody's thoughts today, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Ben.
Well, I'm Nadine Woodward. Can you hear me? Is this on?
Yes.
Loud enough? Okay. I've lived here 29 years. I love this city. My husband and I moved here as newlyweds, and for our jobs in broadcast journalism, this is where we built our lives, raised our children, and where we own a business downtown. I've experienced what's gone on downtown as a business owner and as a broadcast journalist who has covered the issue for the last several years, especially the crime rate and our homeless population increasing, especially in the last 2 to 3 years. I don't come from a place of political experience. I don't think political experience is the best experience, but I do come from a place of being immersed in Spokane issues for 28 years and in a position of public trust. I believe this election is about who you trust to be your next leader. After I retired from KXLY at the end of February, I wanted to get immersed in an even deeper level about what our homeless issue is about. I reached out in the first 5 to 6 weeks to more than 24 stakeholders, nonprofits, law enforcement, businesses, mental health services, drug rehab counselors, our homeless on the street and in our shelters, and discovered that the reality of what we're looking at is very complex, as we'll all admit, and especially you, your boots on the ground, you're working with our homeless population every single day. I wanted to learn from you. You are the experts. And what I heard and what I learned is that the vast majority have mental illness or an addiction. And there are people, too, who fall on hard times. They're living in poverty. They're escaping domestic violence, but the vast majority, mental illness and addiction. I've also come to the conclusion that we will not solve this problem, but we have to do a better job of managing it. And we cannot do it alone as a city. We have to work collaboratively with our regional partners because Spokane cannot do it alone. But I firmly believe that we can be a model for other cities and how we start chipping away and reducing our homeless population.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Cindy Wendell.
Good morning, everyone. I want to thank all of you for being here today, and those of you watching, streaming, and to Joe and Kay and Maurice for your leadership. It is, these are important issues, and that is why I stepped up to run for council president, because I know we can do better. Homelessness and poverty are very complex issues, and we've talked about that. Simply saying, though, that this one thing will take care of it isn't going to take care of it, because it's complex. It requires partnership. It requires collaboration. It breaks my heart to see people suffering. We all walk downtown, and now we even walk in our neighborhoods, and we see it. It's not okay for someone to be alone on a sidewalk, suffering. It's not okay that we have hundreds of families and children invisible to us that are couch surfing. It's not okay, and I worry about them. Homelessness, though, is a symptom, and it's not the cause of what is going on here. And no one agency is going to solve this alone. The city is going to have to partner with other people. We're going to need each other. We need each other more now than we ever have before. We need to have compassion. We need to listen, really listen. We need to act. So I'm honored to be here today. I'm excited to hear the conversation and to continue learning from those of you that are working on this important issue.
Thank you. Councilman Beggs.
Yes, I'm Brian Beggs, and they asked us to give a little bit of introduction for those of you who I don't know. I do want to thank the Homeless Coalition. Patty Norton from the Hearth brought me several years ago to my first meeting back when it was in Brown's Addition, and I've been up to the gathering place since then. And again, I salute you for your concern and all the work and your knowledge that you bring to it. I came to Spokane in 1981 to attend Whitworth College, and I graduated there, and I like to say I was from the Sermon on the Mount cohort of Whitworth, which was feed the hungry, visit those in prison, house the homeless, and do that. And that comes from my family values of a lot of pastors in my family. And educators. I was a social worker at Career Path Services helping disadvantaged people get jobs for several years. And then I went to law school because I thought I could have a bigger impact. And I went to the University of Washington and then started practicing law in Bellingham. Met my now wife, Lori Powers, who's also a social justice lawyer and is assistant dean at the law school. And I've always represented everyday people against injustice. And many of those people are in poverty, many of them are homeless. And we came back to Spokane in 2004 to run the Center for Justice. And in that role for several years, I got to work with many of you on projects, criminal justice reform, landlord-tenant reform, police reform. I've been in private practice again now for almost 9 years, right downtown by the bus plaza. And so I've been downtown a long time. I just want to tell two quick little stories about really my journey in Spokane on homelessness. And the first is in 2004, over on Main and Division, where they didn't even have parking meters there. It was such a bad part of town when I first showed up there. And I'm walking my four-year-old twin daughters the street to our minivan, and a man kind of lurched towards us. He was intoxicated. He fell down right on his face. He was bleeding. We got his shirt out of the car. We staunched the blood. And my girls asked me what was wrong. I said, well, he had too much beer. And so they always would say later, does that person have the root beer disease? And but that was the stereotype that I assumed he was homeless. I don't know. Now, when I've gone to the shelter and served meals, not many people like that there. They're economic refugees. There are people like that. But there's poverty. And it's very complicated. And I'll end my time now because I know I'm over with. But I look forward to talking more about really the specifics. Thanks again for being here.
All right, thank you. Several of you hit on this in your intro, but the first question up is, what is your knowledge and experience about homelessness and housing in this region? How does that knowledge and experience influence your leadership in building a future related to these issues? And this is an open question to all candidates, so whoever would like to go first.
I can go first.
Good.
I didn't talk a lot about who I am in my intro. I grew up in Pullman, Washington, just south of here. And as many of you, if you've been in small towns, the homelessness issue in small towns is not quite as visible when you are in an urban setting. I went to school like Brandon, so we grouped the dogs. But I did grow up in Pullman. I do both. Mm-hmm. But in Seattle, I worked downtown. And I rode the bus. I left my house at 5 o'clock in the morning. I worked in financial services. And Seattle had homeless people. We've always had homeless. And it was something that was new to me. But I wasn't scared. It was actually intrigued. You want to walk by and you want to say hi and you want to get to know people. And then I moved back here after I graduated from college. And actually, just not long ago, I started working. I don't work in banking anymore, but I work for Washington Trust Bank. My office is the corner office there on the Sprague and Post. And I had to write an essay for Leadership Spokane. And I was trying to think about what I was going to write about. And I thought, where I sit is the corner of humanity in Spokane. On one outside of one window is the Davenport Hotel. And the other window was the STA Plaza. And every single day, I watched our town interact. And how we didn't interact, which was really hurt my heart, sorry. It struck me. I hadn't had that type of experience with watching not just getting to know homeless people, but watching what our community does and what we don't do for each other. And it struck a chord. I've worked with Vanessa Behan Crisis Nursery ever since I moved here to Spokane, and not necessarily touching on the homeless issue directly through there, but it is an issue. And we would see it in the eyes of the kids, and in the fear of the parents, and in the anxiety. And it's something that as a community, we need to appreciate what our interaction is like with our homeless community, and what we need to do as an individual as well, and the responsibility on us to help heal our community.
Thank you, Cindy.
So I can, where were you going?
Go ahead.
All right. So I want to kind of personal experience. In 1995, I finished up at Gonzaga University, and downtown, by the way, in 1995 was a lot more dead, not vibrant, and I moved out of town because our community was not growing, and this was before the investment in the Davenport, investment in River Park Square. We've seen a huge amount of growth since then, but I left town for 6 years at that point, and I was living in Oakland. And I hadn't found a job yet, and I'd taken all the money I had in my savings, and I'd sold my CDs, and once I sold everything I possibly could of mine, I had enough money to either pay rent or buy food. And so I looked up, and I went and found the food bank that the city of Oakland ran, and went and got 4 bags of groceries in 1995. And that actually provided me a bridge and allowed me to not be homeless and not end up on the streets. And that frames every decision I make, because sometimes when you give those essential items that's not enabling, what that is actually providing a bridge for somebody for stability. My mom, public school teacher her entire life, was eventually a vice principal of discipline, and she told me this story repeatedly over and over that stuck with me. And this little guy was causing behavioral problems in the classroom over and over and over, and no amount of discipline would work. And so one day she fed him. And from that point on, she kept food in her office, and the number one thing was meeting those basic needs. When we meet somebody's basic needs, like emotional security, like food and shelter, we allow them to meet their higher needs and to accept help for things like mental health and addiction services. And that's where I come from, that you provide those basic needs in order to get the higher needs met. And eventually we can work towards getting more people off the streets if we provide those basic needs first. So that's my personal story.
Thank you.
So So in the early in the campaign, when we reached out, as I mentioned, to a number of nonprofits, and we have so many great programs in this very compassionate community of ours. One of the first places I went to was in April, Spokane Homeless Coalition. They had their big meeting about the five-year ending homeless plan and the fact that we aren't anywhere near ending homeless in that first five-year cycle. And the first guy I met was Ken. And many of you know Ken. He moved here 2 years ago from Phoenix. Great guy. Said, I came here because I knew someone who was running a shelter. He said, you guys have so many programs. You have so much food programs. I gained 50 pounds in my first year here. And everyone chuckled. But the thing that he said, too, was, those of us who come here for help want to know that we have skin in the game. And I thought that was extremely important to hear. I've gone to Union Gospel Mission, Catholic Charities, House of Charity, Housing First, a number of programs, Transitions, you name it. Mental Health Services, Frontier Behavior Health and their services, drug counselors. And it's amazing the work that we do. But I tell you, the other thing I also hear more and more is that people want to get those who need help help, but they also want accountability in the programs, especially the programs that the city of Spokane funds. We want measurable results. We need to meet the basic needs of those who need that, but we need to get beyond just meeting basic needs and just enabling people. We have to want more as a community. When I pass somebody downtown on the street, it kills me to think that they're not getting help. It's not that we don't want to see them or we want to look beyond. We want to make sure that they're not there anymore because they're getting the help that they need. Now, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but we can also learn from other cities that are doing very good things and having success at getting people off the street, into homes, into treatment programs, into rehab, and into transition too. And that's where the focus needs to be.
Well, I just want to echo that it's a complex issue in overlapping. But what I've seen working in social services and partnering with many of you here today and going to the shelters, not just during my campaign, but for several years, I've represented those people in court. And what we're struggling with now more than anything is an issue of poverty and housing demand. And it's gone crazy. Spokane's always been one of the poorest communities of our size in the Northwest. And we have, I think, 50,000 people living in poverty. And it sort of worked when housing was also super cheap. But in the last few years, everyone has discovered Spokane. We're booming, and everyone's moving here. And the vacancy rate's under 1%. And if you don't have much money, you're just vulnerable from a car accident, a medical bill, a temporary loss of job, to be homeless. And when we look at the people who are homeless broadly, most of them, it's an economic issue. When we've surveyed them, the data says they don't have the money for rent, they've been evicted for not paying rent, they don't have a job. There are plenty of homeless people who also have substance abuse issues, and there are a few of them that commit crimes. But there are plenty of people with homes that have substance abuse issues, and plenty of them that commit crimes. In fact, the majority of people commit crimes. So to conflate those two is not very helpful because they're different problems with different solutions, and we are leaning in on all of them. But really, we really have to start with housing, and I'm a big believer in housing first, which includes accountability. Some people have said Housing First doesn't have accountability. It has accountability. But you have to give people shelter and food and social workers in order to get them stable so that they can get the intestinal fortitude to move forward, whether it's housing, employment, beating their addiction, solving their relationship. And so that's what I bring to the table, is a broader perspective on those things, not saying it's all one or the other. And I walk by the bus plaza just about every day, between my law office and City Hall. And it is actually a great mixing place for all people. And I ride the bus. And it is that time where we can come together. And I think it's a really a good point to say, when we treat the bus plaza and homeless people as other, then that That's a problem for our community, and we have to bring that together. And it's going to take everyone on both sides doing it, coming together. And I always, at these forums that we have, this is obviously for candidates, but I want to hear more from people who are homeless or who are formerly homeless and have gotten out of that, because I think that's where we're going to find the solutions. And at the end of the day, we are doing lots of great things. It's just not enough for the scope of the problem. And it's a huge problem in the entire Northwest because people want to move here. But if we can increase our resources, work together even more collaboratively, and treat each person as a human being, we'll get there.
Thank you, Councilman.
Joe, can I just say something?
Yes, you
in
may.
30 seconds?
Yes.
I would say, Brian, there's not enough accountability in Housing First. And that's why even when Ben Carson was here, said that the movement is now to a Housing Second and a Housing Third. There is no required accountability in the HUD-funded Housing First, and there needs to be. So I hope that changes.
Response?
Just to clarify, Ben Carson said he's for Housing First, Housing Second, and Housing Third. And he does support, and HUD supports. And we have $12 million riding on Housing First. That would all go away, and we would have thousands more people in our community homeless if we did not use Housing First. But Housing First is working great in Spokane. In Housing First projects, they track the data, and 93% of those people are there 2 years later. It's excellent data. It's an excellent program, and you have to provide Housing First in order for people to actually get those services, and I'm a huge advocate of it. That is true. That's the data.
Candidate Wendell.
Housing First is part of what we're going to use, the tools we're going to use to solve and make some progress with this. But let me tell you, on my ride along the other day, the downtown precinct, listening to our officers tell me that there are drug deals going in and out of our Housing First programs, that's not okay. Our homeless are being victimized as much as or more than we are. So I'm not saying that Housing First isn't part of it, but we have got to pay attention to what is going on. And we need to partner with that to make sure it works the way it's supposed to work. But when I sat there under the bridge and we are trying to help people get connected to services, and I'm trying to talk to people and asking them, where did you sleep last night? Where did you have breakfast this morning? And I am watching people sit there waiting for our homeless to come out of getting food at Catholic Charities for drug deals. I'm not okay with that. That's not okay for this community.
Yeah, I think it's really important to emphasize that Housing First is supposed to include accountability, and that's going to be as effective as the people who are instituting it. But one example we're doing in the city that I think is really a great Spokane-style solution to things is we're now sending out social workers with law enforcement out in the community at the same time. And we have law enforcement who are public safety and keeping that eye on that, and we have social workers who understand people with mental health issues and poverty issues, and dealing with that. And together, they're getting fabulous results, diverting from expensive jail, expensive medical treatment. And that is what we need to bring to everything, to our criminal justice and to our housing, is services and accountability at the same time.
Thank you, Councilman Beggs. So candidates, we're going to adjust the format just a little bit to limit to 2 minutes for response or for initial response, just so we can get through enough questions here. The next question is, why are people homeless in Spokane? Who'd like to target that one?
I think if you look at the point in time count, there are at least 20 different reasons listed. Lack of income, family conflicts, domestic violence, lack of affordable housing. Last year we had 800 people that had housing vouchers, which means they've done everything right, been through the system, but could not find housing, even though that voucher is as good as cash. Substance abuse, mental health issues, the list goes on and on. The foster care system, if you age out, doesn't do a good job of transitioning. There are 85 veterans in Spokane that we counted at the point in time count that are homeless. And there's vouchers available at the VA, but it's a matter of connecting those vouchers that are out at the VA to those 85 homeless veterans in Spokane. There's a variety of issues, and we have medical care is a huge one. There's just a lot of pressure right now on the housing market, a lot of pressure on people's incomes. Incomes have not kept up, even though the economy has been good. Incomes have not kept up with the pace of inflation. especially the pace of housing. There's a variety of reasons, and we can't pinpoint one. And if we try to pinpoint it down and just say it's this or it's this, we're never going to get to those individualized solutions. We're complicated humans, we're all individuals, and that's why we need case management inside the shelter system, so that you look at where do we get those services. Is it housing? Is it mental health system? But we're not doing a good enough job by just providing a bed. We have to be funding case management inside of the system, and that's where we're failing right now. We're completely failing people when all you do is provide a bed, or in the case of warming centers, you provide a mat. That's not enough. What we need to be doing is providing people ways out.
I agree. We need to be moving people forward. But after talking with all the nonprofits and the people, boots on the ground, who are doing this every single day, they say the vast majority of our homeless are mentally ill, have a mental illness or an addiction issue. Ask Judge Mary Logan, who runs community court. She created that 5 years ago, and she told me 80% of the clients that they try to move through that court are mentally ill and or addicted. That is our biggest challenge as we face this issue today, and we have to do a better job. It absolutely is. And if we're if you're denying it, you're not facing the reality of it. There are other issues, I agree. People escaping domestic violence, people pulling themselves out of poverty, losing a job or having a medical issue, and you fall behind on your bills. We have plenty of programs for those kinds of people in transition, but we need to do a better job of getting people the mental health that they need and the addiction treatment that they need. I'm learning from great cities that have had great success. Was just over in Marysville. Well, in their first year, they were able to go out onto the street. The Envision Center sounds great. We need to get out on the street where those people are and reach them where they are, in the tents, in the shelters, and on the street, and identify those who want help for their addiction. And if they have a charge pending against them or a warrant over their head, we give them a choice. And we say, we'd rather have you get help and not send you to jail. And if we do, we create a network of programs, just like Marysville's done, where there's detox, rehab, transitional housing. I would like to add job skills and community mentors from the faith community and the business community that walks these people through this process. Because if you know anything about addiction, people have lost connectivity in their life and they're finding community on the street. And we need to shepherd these people through a process. They're going to fail. They're going to come back through the process. But that, as a community, is where we need to be.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll go. I just wanted to mention, I think community court is great. And I actually was a lawyer who brought the case that divided off the municipal court from the county so that we could do community court. And I totally agree that the majority of people in the criminal justice system do have a mental health issue. That is. But that's the people in the criminal justice system. That is not... People who are in poverty and have lost their home are vulnerable to developing mental health issues and substance abuse issues, and it's that much harder if you have one of those issues to become housed. So that's true. But I really disagree that we have plenty of programs with plenty of capacity, because I don't think there's anyone here... There's no one here that really has capacity for a whole bunch of more mental health or substance abuse. And the challenge for a city is... We're not set up tax-wise to pay that. That's the state and the feds and the county runs that, and we just don't have enough resources yet. So I totally embrace we need more of those resources, and I think if we really made it a priority and developed those by working with the legislature, which we on council do regularly, and get those, you would then kind of sort out the reality from the stereotype. Because I've noticed, again, downtown, there are people down there who are just kind of troublemakers, and they just get a kick out of doing it. But that's a very small group. And we can't, when we don't have beds for people, and we don't have treatment beds, and we don't have mental health, we can't figure out who's just a troublemaker versus who is just in trouble. And once we do that, then it's easier to hold people accountable for things of their behavior, not their existence.
Thank you.
Going back to our point in time survey that happened back in January, there were many reasons why people identified themselves as homeless. But let's be clear, the top two reasons that were the majority of why people were homeless were family conflict and lack of income. Why? We need to ask why. As taxpayers, and we've talked about how it is, there's three partners here that help fund what we do in the city to help those less fortunate: federal government, state, and the city. It is imperative that our dollars go to the why factor. We need to ask better questions. If we just assume, it's not going to work. And guess what? We had a plan back in 2015. It's 2019. Where are we? I don't think this community looks visibly better, and I am going to make sure that we do. We talk about there's a difference, right? Homelessness are not criminals. But if we've got vacancy rates that are low and housing prices that are high, what has been going on and what has this council done to help us get better? It's too late now for many people. We knew this was coming. Back in 2015, there was an article in the paper about Spokane's being discovered. It's been going on for a while. This is not new. And it's great that we're being discovered. But we need to do a better job of looking ahead, not just 3 months ahead. I'm talking years ahead. And plan for success. Plan to help those that need help. And really figure out why they need the help. We're making assumptions. And we need to do a better job of making sure that we are asking and not assuming and doing more than just going off of one point-in-time survey in January.
And I'll just say, too, Joe, if I can, that point-in-time survey is one day out of 365. It is a snapshot and not an accurate reflection of what's going on. Unfortunately, we're using that as a base for a lot of our decisions, but if we... You guys have a much better picture of what's going on than one night in January could ever tell us. And so I would disagree, too, that I'm talking outside of criminal court that, about our addiction issue. It's in the nonprofits as well. UGM, the majority of the people that they help and serve are addicted. Catholic Charities, the majority. Truth Ministries, the majority.
Thank
you. Teen and Adult Challenge, the majority. It goes well beyond our courts.
It concerns me when my opponent doesn't use the data that we have and instead uses anecdotal data from talking to a couple people. And
it's beyond a couple people.
No, please,
if you were out there talking to people in nonprofits, you would know.
Please don't interrupt me. I don't interrupt you.
All right. Let's.
No,
candidates,
my rebuttal
yes.
is that the point in time count is used by every city in the United States. The U.S. Census, which we base all our decisions on, is a point-in-time count. We can't discount the data.
But, good. Real quick, audience, it's okay to applaud. Please do not cheer or scream or anything like that. And candidates, please allow the other candidates.
I apologize for interrupting you, Ben.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what the council has been doing in the 3 years that I've been on the council about housing things. Because, I mean, it's good news. The economy is booming in Spokane. We did have a crisis in the recession where we stopped building houses and we lost a lot of construction workers, and the council's now on it. So we've really expanded the multifamily tax exempt credit, which helped housing. We just, in the last year, updated density so that we can build more apartments in places that are zoned for apartments, more single family, smaller ones than that. So we're doing that to do. It will take a while, and we will need the realtors and the developers to join with us to build that housing. And in the meantime, we need to fund shelter.
Thank you.
Ms. Wendell, do you have any? Okay. Great. The next question is, a lot of news has been made about the need for a new single shelter, but there's difficulties in finding an adequate location for a shelter that's safe for businesses and area homes. Do you believe a new shelter for singles is needed, and where would you propose such a shelter be located?
Okay, I'll start with this question. I do not believe that more 24/7 low barrier shelters are the answer. And this last plan to locate one at Havana and Sprague was a disaster from the get-go. It is a prime example of planning that didn't happen like it should have been, and collaboration that didn't happen like it should have been. We have to collaborate with our neighbors. And there was the belief that the city was going to get help from the valley and the county on this, only they were brought to the table a little late and never got their answers, their questions answered. And they got protests. And when they had the community meeting, the city couldn't answer any of the questions from those who were there, the neighbors and the businesses. Nobody had questions. These things take planning and organization. And that was an absolute disaster. Now we're looking at the location on East 3rd, right across from the Ramada Inn. I was just over there looking at that, talked to the CFO of Daybreak. They got two other offers on that property, too. We'll see which one comes up with the best one. Personally, I think we should wait to see what happens with the Court of Appeals in the Boise versus Martin case. I don't think we should be investing in anything before we know exactly what we can and cannot do as a city in helping our homeless and addressing this homeless challenge.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we need shelter. I mean, we just do. You know, a year ago, the mayor closed about 150 or 250 beds at House of Charity. And the city council had said, okay, we get it. Too much concentration in one place is a problem. But make sure that you have another place for people to go. Because if you don't, those 250 people are simply going to go out into downtown and under bridges and on the river. And that's what happened on September 1st a year ago. And we've been suffering even more than we were before then, since then. And it's become a crisis then. So you have, I mean, people are going to sleep somewhere. They're going to be somewhere. It's not easy to leave Spokane. And so you have to have that set up, and you have to have a plan. And I agree there has not been enough planning on it. I haven't felt that it was the individual staff members, because they seem very dedicated and working hard, and they're passionate, and they're working with all of you. But it hasn't been really a priority, and we had this warming center substitute for actual shelter. Didn't work. We kicked people out at 7 in the morning, and there were essentially refugee camps around them in places that had never seen that before. So we need places, and the county, I've been meeting with the county officials in the city of Spokane Valley for months now on a joint shelter. We're working on that. They're making a transition. It used to be the city would do its thing and the county would do its thing. We are now coming together to do that together. And it's been a little bumpy getting to the final, but I think we're going to get there, and that's going to improve things. As far as where the best place is, I don't know. Staff works on that. Council has committed the money to pay for it. We need a real estate contract to finalize it. All the things that you've ever heard, you know, it needs to be on a good bus line, hopefully near other services, not too many people, but not so few that it's not efficient to run. You don't want it next to schools, next to other vulnerable populations, but there is going to be no perfect place to do it.
Thank you, Councilman.
It's worse to not do it at all.
Thank you.
Do you want to go or do you want to go?
And in relation to the current situation that we are in with where we're going to be placing potentially a shelter, I have, due to respect for the voter and the process, I'm going to recuse myself from this question because I do have a conflict of interest.
Okay, thank you.
So every human being deserves dignity, and part of dignity is a roof over your head. And if we think we can just not open a shelter and the situation is going to get better, we're kidding ourselves and not being realistic at all. People need a place to stay, and especially during the winter months, because if we don't have shelters and warming centers open, people will die. And that's just a fact of the matter. They will die, and we will be responsible for that. As for the Martin versus Boise decision, the Ninth Circuit rejected the appeal, and City of Boise has appealed that to the Supreme Court. One in 10,000 cases that are appealed to the Supreme Court get taken. So I'm not going to take that gamble and not follow the law. The Ninth Circuit is really clear that if you don't have shelters, you cannot enforce the anti-camping laws. So if we do not want to be Seattle, then we have to have shelters. If we do not have shelters open, we will have public camping in every city park this winter. We will have camping everywhere, and there's nothing we can do about it. We have to morally We have to open shelters because everybody has dignity. But if you don't want public camping and you don't want to be like Seattle, then we'll open a shelter. Because if we don't open multiple shelters and have places for people to stay, we will have campgrounds in every city park. And that's just a fact of the matter. If there's a ruling by the Supreme Court and they take it up, not going to happen for another year. The next year, that is the law of the land.
Responses?
I say we wait a year and we see what happens. We can do the warming centers like we did before. Thank you very much. The shelter that they were looking at Havana and Sprague would have cost almost $2 million to purchase, and the contractor that won the bid to operate it was going to ask for $3.6 million to operate it annually. We're talking $5 million for one shelter. We don't have enough money to buy more shelters. We need to figure out what the courts are going to decide. The court shouldn't be deciding what we can do as a city. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait that out. I think we should. Okay. In the meantime, we can contract out with warming centers.
Thank you. Any other responses? All right. Vulnerable populations are often wrapped in a blanket of assumptions regarding criminal activity and perceptions of decreased safety. While at times vulnerable populations, like the general population also, do pose safety risks, the vast majority of those in need in Spokane are not criminals or a threat to safety. How will you seek to protect the vulnerable men, women, children who call Spokane home?
First thing you do is provide shelter and a safe place to be, because if they're on the streets, they're 124 times likely, more likely than an individual that's living in a home, to be a victim of crime.
You know, one of the things that Rob McCann told me when I met with him at Catholic Charities and went into the House of Charity and in the Housing First units, he said, Nadine, there is a small percentage of our homeless, very, very small. He called them the BMXers, the ones on the bikes with the backpacks that are doing all the drug deals. He said they're the ones preying on our vulnerable homeless. They watch them get their checks at the beginning of the month. They watch them cash those checks, and they roll them under the overpasses. They are our vulnerable homeless. It happens. You can laugh, but it happens.
Thank you.
But what we need to do is increase public safety downtown. I want to relocate a police precinct into the core of downtown. I want more officers engaged on foot patrol and community policing who are moving those criminals out of our downtown core, the ones who are preying on our visitors, the ones who are causing damage to our businesses, and who are making it uncomfortable for people to go downtown. It's a shame. We have such a... The ones who are committing laws are breaking our laws, absolutely. We need to start enforcing the laws. And even the small laws, the less serious laws, have to have consequences if they're broken, so that people don't graduate to the more serious crimes and know that there are consequences. When did we become a lawless society? I don't get that.
Thank you. Thank you. But before the next person answers, audience, please, we want to hear from these candidates. You'll have an opportunity to talk to them afterwards, as well as to media. If you have ideas or suggestions, please keep those to yourselves. We really want to hear the candidates' thoughts today, so allow them to speak. Thank you so much. Other responses?
I want to protect our most vulnerable by not having them be vulnerable in the first place. I want to focus on the people that are invisible to us right now, that are begging for help. And a lot of them have a lot of pride. And we need to find those people and prevent them from experiencing the trauma of homelessness in the first place. I want to do more for this community and not just be reactive. I want to be proactive. I want us to have leadership that looks ahead. I want us to have leadership that partners with people. We have gone far too long with the city thinking we're the only one and we can do it our own way and it's the best way, and that is not right. We all, like I said before, we all need each other. And the best way for me to feel like we are doing our job is protecting our most vulnerable is to keep them from being vulnerable in the first place.
I just want to appreciate all the partnerships the city has. As you may know, we get federal and state funding, but the city itself doesn't provide social workers or programs. We contract out with folks. And I would say in the crisis we've been in the last year since the shelter space was reduced, the community of nonprofits have really come together with the city, and we've had several sessions and working with people. And that has been powerful because we've been leveraging our money and our capacity. We need more. We need to go to the legislature and say it is not enough, because there are so many reasons why people become homeless. As many homeless people there are, as many reasons. And it's true. It's a lost job. It's a lack of education. It's a lack of earning power. It's a medical crisis. It's a lack of mental health care. It's a lack of substance abuse treatment when needed. There's so many different things. And that's not a city. A city is like paving roads, doing police, fire, water. And we're not really set up for that. But this city, Spokane, is rising to that challenge. And we're doing it Spokane style, which is keeping our values and doing it our way, not how the West Side says that we have to do it. We need to continue to do that. This conversation has dipped a little over into crime, which, as I've said before, most criminal acts are committed by people who are housed, including crimes downtown. But I will say that I am for the police getting out of their cars and walking and talking to people and engaging. And the reason, and they've got reasons why they've done it in the past, and so we have to meet them. I represent them as well. But we have to make it safe and give them the resources to do that. Because when people see law enforcement visibly, they feel a little more secure. And the people who are apt to cause problems, they feel a little less secure. And so we just need that there. And I've suggested having, I don't know if we need the whole downtown precinct downtown, because the leadership says, oh, that's not going to work. We need to do that. But the second floor of the bus plaza has a lot of space. And that could be a place where law enforcement is really engaging with people. And I think that engagement as a community, instead of the us and them, is where we need to get.
Thank you.
I feel like I need to be a voice right now of our police officers, because I agree, in theory, it seems right that you would want more officers. Well, first of all, you'd want them walking the street. I'm telling you what, we have about a quarter of who we need. I was there Tuesday morning. They couldn't even get to three quarters of the city, downtown, with what was going on. And if you think that we're going to be able to help people with them being on foot the whole time, we are wrong. We have got criminals out there, and if you're on foot, what do you do with them? You need your patrol car. I was thinking the same thing. Honestly, I had the same thing. Like, I want them more visible. I want them walking. It doesn't work. You need a mixture. And every single officer I talk to, now, let's remind ourselves, they have the most difficult job of anybody in this community. They don't know if they're going home alive every single day. What they want, they do want a precinct downtown. They said this was wrong from the very beginning. We need to listen to them, too. That's when I talk about bringing everybody to the table. We're all making assumptions. We need to talk to all the stakeholders. So let's stop doing that, and let's really bring everybody to the table and do a better job of figuring out what the issue really is.
So I am a bit confused when my opponent brings up public safety, because she voted against the public safety levy that I sponsored. And the voters voted by 65% to hire those 20 officers. And my opponent's response was, we could find a drop in the bucket of $5.8 million in the city budget. And I think that's why experience matters, because $5.8 million, as everybody in this room knows, is not a drop in the bucket. That's why I sponsored the public safety levy, and why we're going to be hiring 20 new officers in 2020. Okay.
We need more police officers. I didn't think it had to be through a tax increase. We could have found that money. Public safety is my number one issue. That's why I have received the Police Guild endorsement, not Ben. That's why the sheriff is endorsing me and not Ben. Ben has said publicly he wouldn't want the police endorsement. He would never ask for the police endorsement. How can you be the mayor of this great city and not want the support from your police department? Our police department will have an advocate in the mayor's office when I'm elected.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so since I've been on the council, we've added more than 20 police positions, and then we did put that on the ballot to get 20 more. A lot of those positions haven't been filled yet, even though we voted the money. And now that we have a surplus in our budget for this year, we're going to be asking the administration, please hire ahead for those 20 so that we can get those people deployed. And I totally agree. Of course, you're going to have police cars downtown and people walking. Right now, we only have the cars. But we need people out there. And I meet with the police union regularly and police officers. And that is true. Everyone needs to work together. And they want to work together with us. But
Thank
they
you.
Need more resources as well.
Thank you very much. The next question, we're going to bring this back to homelessness again. 1 in 5 transgender individuals experiences homelessness. Do you believe shelters and service providers should be able to restrict those that they serve based on gender identity?
Absolutely not. It's discrimination. Everybody has human dignity, and we should not be discriminating as people, especially our transgender community. They experience homelessness at much higher rates than people in our community. We can't expect to just say these people or those people shouldn't be in our system. That's why the courts have been very clear that it needs to be low barrier shelters. And so you could have as many high barrier shelters as you want in a community, and those don't count at all. And we need low barrier shelters where everybody's humanity is respected, and it's straight discrimination and it shouldn't happen.
I'll say this. It is unfair of this community to tell people and organizations what to do. It's not our job to tell you what to do. Now, do we agree, maybe necessarily, with what some of the decisions they make? But we need to bring them to the table and understand, again, why. Because we're making a blanket assumption. And we can't ignore that we have phenomenal organizations in this town. It is not all government-funded nonprofits in this town. We have tremendous faith-based organizations. We have tremendous individual-based organizations. I was on the board of one of them, Vanessa Behan. Not religious-centered, completely privately funded. They deserve the flexibility to serve this community how they serve best, right? But again, we cannot go ahead and assume that they're doing things wrong or to make them feel bad, because we need them. We can't fund this all by ourselves. There are tremendous organizations that are doing incredible things for this community. And again, if there's something that we don't agree on, can we just talk about it? Instead of just making them out to be so bad and saying, I don't agree with you and I don't want your services, that's not our job as a government. It's not our job as leaders. We need to understand again more why. And let's help each other achieve the goals that we want to achieve as a community.
So in my legal life, I've represented several trans people to vindicate their rights under the laws of Washington, to be treated equally regardless of their gender identity, sexual orientation, and people who have lost their jobs over it. I've represented them successfully and gotten them their jobs. And the law is in Washington that if it's a public accommodation, you have to treat people regardless of what your faith beliefs are. But there is an exception, and churches don't fall into that if it's a church-related issue. So there are some organizations that offer homeless services that use a faith-based argument to exclude different kinds of people. And I personally think that's wrong, but I've come from a faith background and have seen all the different theological beliefs that different faith communities have, and I understand that. But obviously, they're not going to qualify for city money and city programs, because that would be against the law. So the challenge is, when we run into these differences, is how do we find the common ground? And you know, that particularly probably question is a little bit pointed at UGM, and I've gone out to UGM and talked with Phil and toured it and found out what strengths they have and what things they do. And I'm not going to say, hey, they're not at the table, because they provide a good service and a service for certain people. Do I wish they had a different practice? I totally do. Will I continue to speak and say, I believe you should have a different practice? I will. But it's going to take all of us to solve this, and the faith community plays an important part. And as long as we're following the law, we can do it together.
I agree with Brian. If you're faith-based and you do not receive government funding, you're allowed to run the program the way you see fit. And we have some faith-based programs in this community that are models of success for how they've gotten people off the street, into rehab, transitioned into a productive member of our society. Now, if you do take government money, you are required. There are different requirements for you. We should not discriminate, and we should keep everyone safe who is in our shelters.
Thank you. Other responses? Spokane is growing, but there's already a lot of strain on our limited housing stock. What type of housing should the city leadership encourage, and where should it be located?
I think we should encourage levels of housing at all levels, and that includes reforming the condo laws to allow more condos. Maybe that means excluding six or less when we build condos. It means that we need more density around our centers and corridors so we actually implement our comprehensive plan. We need to focus on how do we get rid of the 76 vacant parking lots downtown so we can have another 10,000 people living downtown, create a safer environment for everybody, because we all know eyes on the street are better than any number of police officers. But most importantly, with this group, we really need a housing trust fund in Spokane. We have not built a single unit for our aging population in 5 years in our community. We used to receive home dollars in 1992. We received $1.5 million from the federal government. Last year, that number was $1.3 million, and if you index that for inflation, we should be putting another $5 million every year into affordable housing. That means that those houses are indexed so that people that are making 80% of the average median household income, or 60%, or 50%, and then those can have supportive services in it, which keep people and solve the mental health issues and solve the addiction issues. But we need massive numbers. Low-income housing consortium estimates that we need 21,000 units in Spokane County by 2022. We need to be building more. We need to be doing more as a community. We need to be working with our legislature, but we also need to figure out how are we going to free up dollars so that we can add to that subsidy, because it's not just a supply issue. It's a supply issue at the top for about 80% of our housing, and it's a subsidy issue for that bottom 20% that we're not meeting. All of our housing providers are having a hard time building affordable housing. They're about $50,000 per unit short right now. We could be doing a lot better.
I'll go. If we wait for the federal government to take care of our affordable housing, we're right here where we are. That's what we did. We should have had more housing by now. Absolutely. That's right. We needed supply. 4 years ago, we were told we needed supply. Where is it? We know things are getting more expensive. And absolutely, we need to work with everyone to get more housing and dense housing. And I think we agree on a lot of things, all four of us, about how we have the capacity to increase density in a city, to look at some of our commercial corridors. But why hasn't it been done yet? And why is it a crisis right now when the leadership could have done something about this a couple years ago? We need to have people looking ahead. We need to have people looking at our partners again. And if we are going to, as a city, create rules and more regulations that are going to make it harder for our landlords to provide and for our contractors and developers to build, guess what you're going to have? They're going to bail. And we just had corporations buy another housing unit. I just heard one of my people up here we were just talking about this morning. If you want corporations coming into this town, sit back and let the federal government wait for them to bring you your funding. We have to figure out our unique solutions here right now. We should have done it a couple years ago. But we will work hard to do it now and what we can. But we need to protect what the city is. And there are a lot of small business owners who are landlords, and they do a fantastic job. Now, there are some that we need to do a better job of code enforcement with making sure that we provide the right type of housing, the safe and reliable housing. That means we do need to do a better job of that. But we can't afford to let corporations come in here, because guess what that does? It makes it more expensive. So we do need to create more supply, and we should be doing it right now, and we should have been doing it before now.
Thank you.
Yeah, that warning came 4 years ago, and we didn't respond correctly. This is a supply and demand issue. We've got people who want to buy homes, who are ready to move into homes, but there aren't any homes for them, so they're stuck in rentals. If we can move those people through, we would not have the situation that we have now. We also need homes and structures at all income levels, from the lower to the upper. As far as condominiums, I agree with Ben. I wish the state legislature would have passed more legislation making it easier for developers to build condominiums without the liabilities that they experience right now. I love density downtown. Increase the height of buildings. Do infill downtown. More people living downtown. Gives us a more vibrant, healthy downtown. We need to get built. I want to do a regional land analysis, land quantity analysis that Ben and the city council pulled out of a couple of years ago, where we can locate and identify places where we can build. This isn't about sprawl. This is about building homes for people who want to buy a home. That's where we have to be. That's why I received the home builder's endorsement and the realtor's endorsement and not Ben. And you can laugh about that. Ben wanted those endorsements, and here he is, the one who's been on the city council for 7.5 years with the political experience. I'm the one that got the endorsements because they trust me and they want to work with me on getting more homes built in our area.
So what I haven't heard from the people trying to get into office is what specifically they would have done along the way. I'll tell you, in my 3.5 years on the council, what I've worked on. I sat down with developers, particularly Jim Frank, who's probably the most successful, innovative developer in the city, and just went to school with him, figured out what do developers need to build affordable housing at all income levels. And he laid it out, and you should talk to him if you want to know more about it. And we went to the administration and said, we want to make changes in our zoning and housing code, reduce the regulations, make it easier to do. And we passed those. We went to the administration and said, you know, the state legislature gives us the ability to give land for housing, for low-income housing. And we've said, we're ready to do that. We've got a lot of surplus land. Let's do that. So far, we haven't gotten much traction from the administration to do that. We have expanded the multifamily tax exemption so that we can bring that multifamily housing downtown in our centers and corridors, and the new Sprague, the new Monroe. So we are doing those things to make it better. There's more to do. A lot of it is money. A lot of it is money. And we're gonna have to go to the legislature to do that. We have a great opportunity at this time, which is a new situation where Andy Billig is the Senate Majority Leader. Tim Ormsby is the head of the budget in the House. Marcus Riccielli is fourth in leadership in the House. We got a lot of good things passed last year in the legislature by going to them in a focused way. And I think we can do that. And one of the proposals that I've made in the past that I want to see is changing our tax increment financing laws to allow us to use it to build housing. So right now it can only be used to build sewers and sidewalks. But that's where you develop a place like Kendall Yard and you pay for the improvements by the increased values and the tax, property taxes. We can do that to add so that you could do housing. We could change this world before these neighborhoods gentrify, and while it's still affordable, to build up that housing, refurbish it, and provide it to people to live in.
Thank you. Cindy Wendell.
If experience gets us where we are right now with vacancy rates less than 2%, not 1%, and housing costs going up double digits every year, great. Leadership is what we need. We need a fresh perspective. There have been failed projects around the city that we could talk about that are perfect examples of the lack of foresight and the lack of leadership and the lack of partnership. People may not know this about me. They want to assume I've been a stay-at-home mom and I haven't been doing anything for the last 12 years. I've been in banking, I've put together loans, I know financing packages, and I've been in commercial real estate and I manage property.
Thank you, Cindy.
So this election is about what kind of community we want. And when you go sit and talk to the home builders and you talk to the real estate association, they want you to sprawl out and build outside the city limits. My opponent has said that she would actually consider using city dollars to subsidize housing outside the city of Spokane. You don't get to spend our utility rates on projects outside the city without sacrificing something inside the city or raising those utility rates. This is about what kind of community we want. If we want to focus on our centers and corridors and housing and density around there, that's what we have to focus on.
Thank you.
Actually, that's not true. I didn't say I wanted to use city taxpayer money to do that. I said what I would do is I would consider, because if we need new homes, those big developments are not going to be built most likely in the city. We're landlocked. If we can do it just outside of the city limits and negotiate a win-win situation with those builders, the builders pay for those hookups. Those costs are then passed on to the homeowner who's purchasing that home. The city doesn't have to pay for that.
I just want to mention one thing about the land quant and the analysis. That was the mayor who put the kibosh on that. I actually sat on the committee with the county to come up with that. And that would show us all the places in the city that are ready for home building. But the city's doing that anyway, so builders will have access to that. And the other thing I just want to say is that I would love to take credit for rising home prices and everyone moving here and a hotless real estate market in generations, but I can't, actually. But city council can do more. But we're only going to do it if we have the mayor's office and the council working together instead of opposite each other.
Thank you. We have had a lot of questions submitted, but we are at a time of actually having closing statements. So here's what we will do with the remaining questions. So we will compile those. We'll send them to the candidates. And if the candidates would like to respond in writing, to our forum, we will post those responses. It's okay. So, all questions were stated in writing, but you can talk to the candidates afterwards, and you can talk to the media if you'd like to afterwards. So we will now move to closing statements from our candidates. They drew numbers ahead of time, so they will be able to go in that order. Which is Cindy Wendell, you are first.
Great, thank you.
You have 3 minutes.
Perfect, thank you so much. Tragedies don't just happen overnight. There are tragedies that we see, and there's a lot of tragedies we don't see. But we need to make sure that we are doing everything we can to prevent those. And it's really difficult to talk about certain programs, certain examples. Really, when it boils down to is a lack of leadership. We talk about how this council, who has had a supermajority, has had the opportunity to get things done, has had veto authority, and still things aren't getting done. It's about working together as partners and not stopping things in their tracks. It's about reaching out to all of you in the room to find out what's the right solution here for Spokane. We want to listen to you. We need everybody's input. We're going to need to stop assuming. We need to stop telling people what to do. We've got many stakeholders in this room that are very passionate about your work. I've met many of you. I'm excited to meet even more of you. This has been a great learning opportunity for all of us. But everybody needs to come together for this. And we can't sit back. Good leaders don't sit back and blame someone else for stuff that hasn't been gotten done. Good leaders step up and make it happen. Good leaders look at the foresight and figure out the information they need instead of sitting back and saying, well, I didn't have that information. Sorry, it's not my fault. This city can do better, and we will do better, and I believe we will all come together to do that because we are so passionate about this issue and many others that we'll be talking about over the next 2 months. I want to thank, again, our moderators. I want to thank you for being here and for caring about our community, and I look forward to actually continuing the conversation and being able to answer some more questions.
Brianne Beggs, you are second.
So I've been working for you for a lot of years, long before I was on city council, both when I was a social worker trying to get people back to work, when I worked in our public schools, when I was at Center for Justice, working with really most of the nonprofits here, working with them, and since I've been on city council. I love working for you. I love getting things done. And whether it's reforming our police, which we did, arising out of the Otto Zemm case, updating our civil rights ordinance so that we're protecting all people in this town, reforming our criminal justice system, which has so much impact on people who are homeless or potentially homeless. That's the work that I've been doing, and I've been doing it on behalf, I believe, of everybody, not just one. I sit with the tenants, I sat with the landlord. I sat with the police, the public defenders, the prosecutors, the sheriff's department. And we try to figure out. And that is my core belief, that it's together we're going to get things done in Spokane. I've lived in the West Central. I've lived in Hilliard by Rogers. I lived in Logan. I live on the South Hill now. I live on a block that's zoned multifamily. I have people in apartments living on both directions on my block. My kids went and graduated from public high school. My clients have been really everyday people and so many people from marginalized groups. That's who I rub shoulders with every day. That's who I work with. And that's what it's going to take, because there's so many people who have an idea, well, if we just did this or we just did that, it's going to solve this big problem. We just cared more, we just tried. And it's really not about that. It's more complex, and yet it's simple because it's each person. Every homeless person has a story. And so many of you are engaged with understanding that story and moving them forward and empowering them. We can't do it for them. We can offer a hand. But the truth is, there is not enough money and resources right now to do that. Folks like you are burnt out trying to help people. You're crying at night for people because you don't have what you need. The city itself can't supply that, but we continue to lead and support that idea that every person matters, and that if they are housed, they are more likely to conquer whatever issues are in their way. And so when it comes to homelessness, there is one big solution: more housing. And we've been working on it, but we've only gotten this much for it. But if we could get everybody on the same page and say more housing together, then we could get those resources together. But right now there's division that, oh no, we don't need more housing. We don't need more shelter. We don't need more programs. That's not gonna work. We need more, but we need more together. I appreciate all your attention. This has probably been the best forum that we've been to this year. So please go out and spread the word of what you believe we need in Spokane.
Thank you.
Well, and I want to thank Joe and Kay and the library staff and all of you for coming here and for all the incredible work that you do. I believe that this election, the results of it, will determine where we are as a city and what we are for at least a generation. You know, when I went out and talked to the stakeholders who were involved in this homeless issue, probably the two biggest stakeholders had two very different ways of looking at it. One said, we enable. We absolutely admit that we enable, but we believe every person deserves dignity. The other stakeholder said, Nadine, do you know where you get true dignity? True dignity is when you help yourself to be a better person and lift yourself out of a situation. We need to help lift people out of their situation and do a much better job of it. On primary day, I was waving signs with my volunteers. Some of them were here at Northwest Boulevard and Ash. I had a guy panhandling about 10 feet from me. I had another woman who needed assistance across the street. I was walking. She had a walker, and I helped her across the street. And I said, where are you going? She said, I'm going to that Planet Fitness desk down the street for rehab. Rehab, what happened? She says, well, back in January, I was at the Monroe McDonald's, where a bunch of my friends always buy breakfast sandwiches for the homeless. And we passed them out, and I was going back to my car and got hit by a vehicle. And one of the women came out to where I was on the ground. I thought she was going into my purse to get my cell phone to call 911. She stole that woman's wallet and left her on the ground. We can be better than this, and we need to be better than this. Our taxpayers, hardworking taxpayers, are asking for accountability, demanding accountability in our city fund programs and in the way we address this issue. And that's what we have to start doing. They are fed up. We have hardworking taxpayers that live paycheck to paycheck. We live in the poorest legislative district in our state, and we have to do a better job of giving them the services that they provide, but holding everyone, our government, our programs, everyone accountable. That's exactly what we need.
So thank you, everybody, for coming. Thank you for hosting. Great job, Joe. Really appreciate it. And Kay. I believe immediately we need shelters. And we can provide case management in those shelters and help people get out of poverty, get into housing, better their lives. But until those basic needs are met, we just need to be real with each other. That if you're living on the streets and there is no place to sleep that's safe, I'd take a drink. I'd use drugs. If I were homeless on the streets, if we want to get them out of their situation, we meet the basic needs first. That's what I've been taught, is that every human being has dignity. Part of that includes feeding them, creating human relationship, and providing a roof over their head. I do believe this election is really important because it says a lot about us and how we feel about our community, because we're all part of this same community. And how we build it out, do we spread out or do we densify in our city and create more walkable neighborhoods? Think about the last 6 years. If we get to blame every single problem on the council, then we get to take complete. I'm excited to go over to Riverfront Park because look at that $65 million. I'm excited about the record economic development over the last 5 years. I'm excited about the record sales tax growth that we've seen over the last 5 years. Over the last 3 years, we've spent more on our roads than ever before. Sprague Avenue was my idea, and we invested $18 million, and we've seen a higher median household income growth and property rate growth on Sprague Avenue, where we invested smartly that city money. I'm proud of the bike pedestrian bridge, where that has resulted in $50 million in private investment already. I'm proud of North Monroe, because we've seen more small businesses open on North Monroe. We can continue that growth and address our challenges at the same time. That's why I'm running for mayor. But firmly on this issue, I believe in human dignity, and that includes a shelter over your head, and we are hiding and not being true to ourselves if we don't admit that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, candidates.